You're listening to 4Player Plus, a weekly bonus podcast covering a variety of gaming and pop culture topics. Episodes are recorded live on Monday nights around 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on 4pp.tv. Our Patreon supporters are invited to join us in the exclusive Discord chat room, where they can be a part of the discussion as we record it live. To learn more about this or how to access all of our podcast content, please visit us at 4playernetwork.com. On with the show! Everyone, welcome to 4Player Plus. Obviously, this is a bonus podcast that we record over here at 4playernetwork.com. We do these weekly, bi-weekly, pretty much whenever we have something good to talk about. It's a variety show. We can talk about anything from movies to special topics or that we can't really get to on the main podcast, or games that we can't get to in the main podcast. This week, I'm joined by Nolan.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
And Christopher Davis.
Hello.
To talk about a film that we all went and saw together. This past weekend, we went and saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, the latest movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, obviously. I also, as part of the show, too, because obviously we usually have Crispy on these two because he's a big Marvel fan. He couldn't be here tonight, but I sent him some questions, some hard-hitting questions that I wrote myself, and then he responded back. I'm going to read some of those, and we're going to kind of use those as like kicking off points for some of these discussions tonight. So anyways, before I get too far, I just want to reiterate too, if you're a supporter of us on Patreon, which you can find us at patreon.com/4player, you can actually join us in our exclusive Patreon Discord channel. It's called 4Player Plus Chat. While we record these live, anything that you actually say in there, we'll read as we're recording it and possibly even react to and respond to live. So if you've seen the movie, or if there's any, in a future episode, if it's just something that you want to chime in on, if you're a supporter, jump on into that chat room, type it away, and we will, when we have a point where we can react to it, we will do so. So first of all, I want to thank everybody who's in our chat. Can we get a roll call for people in Discord chat? Just say hey so I can kind of read your names off.
Hey.
And not you, Chris Davis, not you. You're in the
I'm in Discord, sir.
Well, you are. That's very true. Thank you for being in the Discord, Chris Davis. So like I said, Ant-Man and the Wasp, we're going to talk about that here in a second. I do want to really quickly tease next weekend. I think I have next weekend's episode lined up. And I know someone on Twitter or in Discord had actually called me out because I said something about doing a top five with Carlos. That is still coming, but we're waiting on it for a very special week. But we will do that. But next week, Chris Davis has been trying to talk to me about Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom Forever. I know. I went and saw it opening weekend, and I think him and I are still the only people on the site who have seen it. So we're going to talk about Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, but with a caveat, we're going to tie it into our experience playing Jurassic World Evolution, that new video game that just came out fairly recently. So it should be kind of a twofer. Movies, video games, should be fun. Right, Chris Davis?
Yes.
Good.
Mandatory enjoyment.
Yes. So that will be next weekend. But anyways, enough about that. Let's talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'll get to the questions from Crispy here in a moment. I just want to quickly start out by saying I finally saw Ant-Man 1. Like,
finally.
I know. It took me so long to see it. It was, for the longest time, it was like the only movie in the MCU I had never seen. I was trying to watch all of them before Infinity War came out, and for some reason, I didn't get around to doing that before Infinity War came out. But I finally saw it, and you know what? It was pretty good. It was pretty good. How did y'all feel about the original Ant-Man? Were y'all like super excited going into Ant-Man and the Wasp? I feel like it has kind of like a, like it doesn't really feel like it's, it feels like a little bit separate from the MCU because it's such like a weird side story, I suppose.
I mean, it definitely feels separate, and it feels like it's kind of its own thing. And I was honestly, I was glad they didn't. I did it. I'm glad they didn't try to introduce Ant-Man similarly to how they did
Doctor Strange, Thor.
No, that guy.
Black Panther.
No,
I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
Is it a Marvel character? Oh, Hawkeye.
How they introduced him, I think, in the first Thor.
It was in the first Thor movie.
And it was just kind of a caveat. Don't get me wrong. I love Jeremy Renner. He's great. But I'm really glad they gave Ant-Man his own movie, because that was one of the things that people, as soon as they announced, hey, we're doing the Avengers, everyone was like, well, you know, Ant-Man wasn't a real original Avenger. They're clearly not going to do Ant-Man because he's so stupid. And then everyone was kind of worried about it. And I'm glad they took the time to actually give him his own movie, because even though Ant-Man is kind of a silly concept, I think you can do it in a good way. And clearly they showed that, hey, yeah, we can actually make a quality movie with the Ant-Man character.
I think Ant-Man very much falls into the category of like Marvel or comic book heroes that like I didn't think for one second would work in movies, like, or what, not in a way that would be like taken seriously by the fandom. I figured it would come out. It would. I was like, when I heard they were making Ant-Man, I was like, really? Like, that's what they're spending their money and their time on is Ant-Man? And then it came out. I didn't watch it for reasons. I don't know. And then I finally saw it and I was like, this is fucking great. It's funny. It has like a different tone than a lot of the other Marvel movies. It doesn't take itself nearly as seriously, but somehow it still works. It still fits in with like, as, obviously we saw Ant-Man appear in Civil War and it was like one of the highlights of the movie. So they found a really nice like kind of like corner of the MCU for Ant-Man to exist and occasionally like overlap with the other films. Also, Skyliner in chat a minute ago mentioned that Edgar Wright was originally supposed to direct Ant-Man, the first Ant-Man.
I know he wrote the script for it, and I think while they, to my knowledge, I know he wrote at least the first draft of the script, and I think some of that probably got left in and incorporated into the final version. Don't quote me. I'm sure Crispy knows better than me. But you know, that was one of the things that a lot of people comment on is the fact that, you know, Edgar Wright, the great writer and director he is, probably would have made Ant-Man even better if he had stayed on the whole project.
And if you're not familiar, Edgar Wright did, most recently he did Baby Driver, which I think is a fantastic movie. And, was it Scott Pilgrim?
Scott Pilgrim. And he's done Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz.
Oh, that's
the
right.
World's End.
That's so. Yeah. I totally forgot he did Shaun of the Dead, which is probably what he was first like most well known for, I guess. So yeah, and you can kind of definitely see some of that shine through with like just the style of the writing and the humor and the pacing and everything. So even though he didn't stay on to actually direct it, you can see his influence on where the movie went. But how did y'all feel? Just I guess in general that. We don't, like I said, we don't need to focus solely on like spoiling the movie, but like coming out of Ant-Man 2 or Ant-Man and the Wasp, how did y'all feel? Just general reactions, I guess, first reactions to it.
Well, first of all, I'll say that Ant-Man killed Dumbledore, which I did not see coming at all. Very shocking. No, I'm just
fans are gonna be pissed.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they leaned into the comedy. And I think some of it played really well. Mm-hmm. Some of the jokes, you know, hit me pretty good. Others fell a little flat. One of my biggest criticisms of the movie is they kind of dumbed down. Why can I not think of Paul Rudd, Ant-Man's character's name?
Scott Lang.
They kind of dumbed him down a bit. Like, this guy was like a mechanical engineer, like a super smart guy. And he's like, oh, what's a...
You didn't have that like that moment in the first Ant-Man where he like was first breaking into Hank Pym's home just to break into the safe, and he had that really awesome moment where he saw the really old safe, and he had to kind of like improvise on the fly, and like he used like nitrogen to expand the insides of the lock and blow the doors off.
Like, yeah, I like that it was still Paul Rudd, and he's a very funny guy, and he's very, you know, he's very quippy and stuff like that. But yeah, in the first movie, I thought you got to see his intelligence a bit more, where in this, they're like, he's like, oh, it was in a closet. And they're like, you mean a wardrobe? And he's like, no, it was like a standing closet with doors. And they're like, yeah, that's a fucking wardrobe.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just like, how would a mechanical engineer, like this like really smart guy, like not know what a wardrobe is? And throughout the movie, there are multiple times where kind of that happens, and it seems like they just kind of leaned into the lovable oaf almost character.
Also, how would a thief, like a skilled thief, not know what a wardrobe is?
Prime example.
Yeah.
Chris Davis, what did first reactions to it? What did you think? I know you seemed pretty high on it after we saw it.
I've only ever seen Ant-Man 1 once.
Same here.
And I really did enjoy it. It was I watched it on the flight back from E3 last year, I think.
Hmm.
And I enjoyed it, but I honestly think that Ant-Man 2 is kind of better.
I think that statement could go one of two ways, because in a lot of ways I think it is better in terms of I honestly think it's maybe a more from moment to moment I feel like it might be a more enjoyable film, like a more entertaining or more fun film to watch, but I think I would say personally, I think maybe the writing in the first one is a little bit tighter, and the story is a little bit tighter, it's a little bit more straightforward. They definitely inject, like, you can tell like the budget with this one was a bit higher. because they obviously had proven that Ant-Man was a success. And this one is also proving to be another successful movie for Marvel. But with the inflated budget, you get, you know, more bombastic with it. And suddenly you get thing like some of the problems that may have plagued some of the other Marvel movies. Like suddenly they can do crazier things with the villain, like special effects wise and whatnot. And you kind of, and I want to talk about the villain here in a second. Just kind of, maybe we can talk about it right now, but just like to kind of
villains.
The main villain that you're kind of pushing the whole, that kind of drives the whole story forward is, her name is
the
Ava.
FBI agent?
No, I want to talk about him though. Ava, who is known as Ghost, played by Hannah John Cannon. Sorry, I have the cast list next to me here.
Which evidently she got in the movie because of a recommendation from Steven Spielberg.
Interesting.
Yeah.
She's not really a well-known name at this point, so this is probably, you know, going to be great for her career. But sorry if that noise came across in the feed. I'm so sorry.
Well, what I wanted to say was that I think the characters play off each other a lot better in this movie than they did the first. And I think the villain in the first one felt kind of cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it kind of felt just like Obadiah Strange in the first Iron Man film.
Iron Man, yeah. And you're right. I think it is cookie cutter. And actually, and I think in a lot of ways, Ghost is kind of cookie cutter as well. Just because, like, she's being, her motivations are very, you know, her motivation is that she has been rendered, I don't even know how you would describe it. She's kind of like in between realities, or she's like phasing in and out of matter.
There was a scientific experiment gone awry, mm-hmm. and now the quantum realm is kind of, her body was irradiated with quantum realm. So yeah, she passes between dimensions, is her thing, but she can't necessarily control it, and that is slowly, like, I guess, you know, spoilers, killing.
Yeah, so her motivation is to try and find the technology that will allow her to save herself and, like, render her, like, a basically make her physical form permanent. That's why she's going after Hank, which obviously puts her in contact with the Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's kind of like it's self-preservation. Like, the first movie, the villains was driven by, like, greed and, I don't know what the word you would use.
Greed and a lust for money.
Yeah, lust for money and power and whatnot, which is pretty pretty standard. I think he was very Obadiah Strange from Iron Man 1 in that sense.
Which I think is actually Obadiah Strain. Sorry.
Yeah, Strain, not Strange.
Oh,
Strain.
Obadiah. Yeah, oh, okay. Good point.
But I agree that it did seem very familiar. The first movie, the main character has this cool technology. There's this bad guy that wants to make a better version of it and then stop the original guy. And that's kind of the same thing that happens. The motivations are slightly different. And I think there's probably, I'm not crispy. I don't have my comic book knowledge, but I think there's probably a little more backstory probably involved in that. They do slightly mention I can't remember the bad guy's name. I know he became the Yellow Jacket or whatever, but he worked for Hank Pym and he knew about this technology, and Hank Pym was like, no, you can't use that. That's bad. We should stay away from that. And that's what kind of drove him, was the fact that he knows this thing exists, but the person who he admires the most won't let him even touch it.
Yeah.
And that kind of drove him. That's a little more than just, oh, I want to have power. So,
yeah. And I think because they got the bigger budget, you get this like really cool effect and you can do all these cool, like, action sequences with the new villain Ghost. She's obviously a very like limber character, and she's moving all over the place and doing all kinds of martial arts and stuff, and like that stuff's really fun to watch. But I think at the end of the day, her motivations just felt kind of, you know, the one dimensional. I don't know, but she was still a lot of fun to watch throughout the movie. And actually, one of the questions that I asked to Crispy, I posed to Crispy, like I said, I emailed him and he wrote me back. So one of the questions I asked was, does Ghost exist in the comic books? And if so, what are the key differences between the comic and the movie depictions that you think fans should be aware of? And Crispy responded with, Ghost does in fact exist in the comics, though I'm not overly familiar with the character. I think in the books, Ghost was originally a man and was introduced as an Iron Man villain. He put a question mark in parentheses there, so he's not 100% certain on that. Maybe somebody in Discord or chat can confirm for us.
I just Googled Ghost and all I'm finding is Patrick Swayze. I don't
know. Just lots and lots of pictures of Patrick Swayze. But he says, my exposure would have come through the character's membership in the Thunderbolts, which is Marvel's answer to Suicide Squad. Task Force X. So it seems like they took a lot of creative liberties with the character. I don't know anything about the
here's my thing with that, Nick. I don't care.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really matter. They do that all the time in these movies.
I almost prefer these movies to have nothing to do with the comics. Just take these cool characters and do whatever you want from them. I mean, I guess I could kind of understand some people have a dream of seeing, you know, Gotham by Gaslight. They want to see that in like the, you know, whatever. They want to see the things they've liked, but there's nothing wrong with taking an original concept, original idea, and doing your own thing, or even slightly modifying things. I understand that can upset some people because it's not true to the comics, but I've kind of, you know, similar to, in my opinions on the Game of Thrones books versus the Game of Thrones show. I don't care that they're completely different. Like, you can, the more different they are, the happier I am.
Just makes it easier to enjoy both.
Exactly. There's no, I don't have to take this thing and compare it. Like, well, you know what? They messed this up and this was slightly different. If you do something completely different, I can't complain as long as it's good.
Yeah. But they do that all the time in these movies too, which I think is great. Like, Civil War was obviously, like, they take these like core concepts that you recognize from the comics and then kind of flip them on their head or do something a little bit different, which makes them feel unique. Like, Civil War is something that exists in the comics, but like the way things that they did to approach it in the movies, one, out of necessity, they have to do that when they're trying to tell a story in like a 2.5-hour movie. It happens all the time. So it's not totally surprising. I think it's kind of a cool choice that they took this character that may not be super well known. They made the character a woman, which was normally a man, which I think is pretty cool. Although, who's to say, maybe at one point it was a woman in the comics too. But and then basically took the villain who's part of a bigger Marvel universe, and instead of making him a villain for Iron Man, let's make him a villain for Ant-Man. Like, that's kind of a cool concept. I kind of hope they do more of those, kind of mixing it up in future movies, which I'm sure they will.
All right, question, Nick, not to yes. throw you off your cadence or anything.
How dare you?
I'm getting a little antsy over here, though, because I wanted to bring this up.
Antsy.
Good one, Nolan. That's so good. You're so much better at these than I am.
Calm down. I'm trying to. Okay, so here's my another qualm I had in this movie. So, spoilers. They take a building and they shrink it down. That was in the trailer.
I think whatever. I know where Fine. You're going with this.
They shrink the building. They shrink it again when it's in the car. Fine, whatever. They have the ability to shrink things as small as they want. How come they didn't shrink it down to the size of like a grain of sand and then like give it to an ant and then tell the ant to like go somewhere? And then everyone who's trying to get to that building is like, I can't find it. Like, where is it?
Maybe there are limitations on the science, Nolan.
Hold on, Nick. So they have a building and they shrink it down to the size of, I don't know, like 2-foot by 2-foot cube. And then they take that and they are holding it in a vehicle and they shrink that vehicle down to the size of a matchbox car. So clearly they can shrink it down. Pretty small, like a 2-by-2-foot cube shrunken down while inside a matchbox car would probably be about the size of the grain of the sand, maybe slightly larger.
You're right, but here's, this might even bother you even more.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the whole concept of this movie, right, they have this lab, right, they've found the way to shrink this building and literally turned it into like a rolling suitcase, right? So they can like shrink it down to a suitcase size and then carry it around, and they can set up the lab anywhere they go and continue their research. That's how they're evading the police and all that, which I think is a cool concept. But wouldn't it be like just like jostling the building like it's an earthquake every time that they moved it around? And then they Very like much. Blow it back up and everything's perfectly in place still. What's up with that? You know what? I think it's best to just not think about it.
I mean, they never really show like but that one floor though.
I know, but like, you'd think after they did that and they went back into it, the desks would be on the side, like everything on the desk would be flying everywhere. Like, it would have been a fucking mess.
What if it's all nailed to the ground?
Like, I'm sure that's the stuff that they're building in there is probably fairly sensitive, and you don't want to be jostling it around like that. But you know
also
what?
I was going to say about Nolan with the shrinking it down and putting it on an ant's back. I mean, they kind of do address that later in the film at the docks with the seagulls.
And I brought that up, and Bernadette brought up the same point that, oh, you know, a seagull could blah, blah, blah. But I mean, just because like a seagull eats the building, I mean, it doesn't mean the building gets destroyed. You could always enlarge the building. I mean, even if you're inside it, they clearly had like the remote that they could increase the size whenever they wanted. So why didn't they shrink it while they were inside it? Because clearly you can shrink yourself just fine. And then, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you, I guess technically the suit has to be, have to be in a suit. I don't know. Whatever. But still.
Nolan?
Like, the fact is, what's up?
I think it's probably best you don't think about this stuff when you're watching these movies. Like, that's like, right. That was also like the one thing when I heard them talking about doing an Ant-Man movie, I was like, I can't. It, in a weird way, I can kind of accept and buy like all the other stuff, right? All the other ridiculous stuff they do in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But for whatever reason, the thought of being able to shrink anything down to the size of an ant seems almost a little too much to like stomach. I don't know.
Nick, you can also shrink things down smaller than the atoms that they are encompassed by.
That's,
I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the science of the movie needs to make sense. I'm just saying if I had the ability to shrink a building down this small, I wouldn't shrink it down like much larger than that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
I do see what you're saying. Real quick, I want to address a comment from Illumination in our Patreon Discord. She says she did some research in regard to Ghost. I think the character was changed to female just for the movie. I don't see any indication of her being a she in the comics. Thank you, Illumination. Appreciate that. She found an article. We appreciate your digging. Thank you for clearing that up. All right. I'm going to kind of... Oh, real quick. So we didn't really talk much about like kind of the basic setup for the movie, which I think was actually really cool. Because the movie actually picked... Like, we just saw Infinity War, right? Everybody... Like, half the world fucking... Okay, sorry. Minor spoilers for Infinity War, but if you haven't... If this is still a spoiler for you, you're doing something wrong. You're living your life wrong. In Infinity War, like half the universe was wiped out with the snap of his fingers, right? So
yeah.
What they did in Ant-Man was they actually, this sequel picks up right after the events of Civil War, where Scott Lang is actually on house arrest for leaving the country and like being a part
well,
of it.
Not right after. It's like
yeah,
two
no, yeah. It's
years
like
and,
a
or a
years
year
after.
And 300
like,
something days.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So it's they're telling the story in relation to Civil War, not to Infinity War.
Honestly, my assumption is this movie picks up right as Infinity War starts.
Yeah,
because Infinity War only lasts like a day or something like that. Maybe
no, it happens over a course of a couple days.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, a couple of days. And this movie takes place over a couple of days.
Yeah.
My assumption is there a round happening at like the exact same time?
Yeah. So, and that would actually make sense. We'll get to that in a little bit too, because I have a question from Crispy. It has to do with that post-credit scene, which we'll talk about a little bit. That might be the biggest spoiler that's going to come out of this discussion. But what I liked about it was that Scott Lang is on house arrest. He's on good behavior. He's, you know, trying to keep himself entertained because he can't leave the house. He's having a really great relationship with his daughter, which I thought was a really fun scene, watching him try to entertain his daughter without leaving the house, which I thought was awesome, and how he has that like maze set up and everything. It was just a really cute scene. Really good scene. Mm-hmm. He's on good terms with his ex-wife, even her new husband, who I, for whatever reason, I like that character a lot. Like how he's just so, like, you don't see like ex-husbands and like new husbands like getting along like this usually for obvious reasons, but like they're best buds for whatever reason after the end of the first one. Every time they're on screen, it's pretty funny. But because of the on house arrest, they introduced this character who I think was my favorite character in the movie, and I think Nolan mentioned him a little while ago. The FBI agent that's kind of keeping tabs on Scott Lang and in charge of his house arrest. Who is actually, his name is, I think it's...
The actor or the character?
The actor is Randall Park, right?
The character is Jimmy Woo.
Yeah, Jimmy Woo. And you might know him from, I recognize him immediately from that scene in The Office where he pretends to be, why am I blanking?
Jim.
Yeah.
He was also in The Interview. He played Kim Jong-un. And he was also in the TV show where he stars, Fresh Off the Boat.
He was Kim Jong Un, Kim Jong Un in The Interview. That's crazy. Yeah, he's great. He's hilarious, and he is so funny in this movie. I absolutely loved it. Every time he was on screen, I was laughing out loud. But like that whole concept of like of him being on house arrest and him trying to like save the world and do all these things without like being caught by the FBI, leaving the house, I thought was a really nice kind of like side story and where you kind of frame everything that's happening, because there's always that question of like, oh shit, if he gets caught, like he's not gonna be able to see his daughter forever, for you know, for a long time, he could go to jail and stuff. So that was a really nice kind of like driving motivation. So there's always that like intense moment where you realize, oh shit, the FBI is picking up on stuff, like because they see Ant-Man doing things and they're like, that's Scott Lang, what the hell? They go to his house, and there's always that intensity of, like, will he make it back in time? Usually that results in, like, some ridiculous scene where he's pretending like he never left the house in the first place. Great stuff. I love that character. Also, let's see. I see a comment in here from... Sorry, I'm kind of jumping around here, because Destrotor made a comment, because we were talking about when this movie took place. And Destructor says, I assumed Ant-Man 2 took place at some point before Infinity War because there was a ton of different things that happened near the end of the movie. The mini montage of Scott and his kid and the family hanging out together, etc.
At the end of the movie, yeah, there's all that, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer's back. Spoilers, I guess, you know, whatever. It's him and the family finally, you know, so their family's reunited. Scott and his family, while they weren't, like, not reunited, I mean, just he was on house arrest, so he couldn't leave the house, but now they can go off and do their own thing and they can do whatever. But I will say that in Infinity War, I believe Black Widow says they're talking about why Clint Hawkeye isn't there, because he wanted to spend time with his family, and they mention that Ant-Man's on house arrest.
Oh, they do.
They say that in Infinity War.
Oh, I missed that. Good catch, Nolan. Good catch. The important thing here is they take place around the same time.
I know we're really getting into the weeds, and I don't mean to antagonize you. I just wanted to say that. Whatever.
Did you say get into the weeds? Oh, you did it again, Nolan. You did it again.
That's two.
Antagonize. Man, you're so much better at this than me. Okay. I'm going to read some questions that I sent to Nolan. Or not Nolan. Crispy. So the first question I asked him was, in the grand scope of the MCU, where do you feel Ant-Man fits? Do you think he will ultimately serve some important purpose in the main arc, or will he always be... Or will he always operate on a smaller playing field than everyone else? Do you see what I did there? I can do it too. to which Crispy responded, smaller playing field. Nice. Nice, Nick. Ant-Man was introduced and I think still occupies a more marginal space in the MCU, which plays to its strength. Ant-Man is not Captain America or Iron Man. He's not our platonic ideal of a superhero. He's an offbeat character who exemplifies the weirdness out there elements of the superhero genre. Just like the first movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp gives a different view of the world of the MCU from the periphery. We see how normal, down-to-earth folk live in a world inhabited by super soldiers, wizards, and gods. This works to broaden the scope of the shared universe in a wonderful way. In the Ant-Man films, perhaps more than anywhere else, we feel the size of the MCU by examining a relatively smaller section of it. That was a pretty good answer. And it made me realize something. We've talked about this movie for about 20 minutes now, and we haven't mentioned the Wasp. Because this movie is called Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's true, and Evangeline Lilly is... an okay actress, I guess. I think she got big because of Lost, and yes. It's not that I don't like care for her. I'm just indifferent towards her. I haven't really seen her in a role that's really like wowed me. Sure. So I mean, I thought she was pretty good in the first Ant-Man. A little sassy, but I understand why she was, because she thought she deserved to be Ant-Man. And so then she finally gets to be as the Wasp, and she has all these much better like powers and stuff than him.
She's
and
a bit more intense.
Definitely. I do think they played off each other well. I thought that she got to shine a little more in this movie than she did in the first one. I think one of the best scenes was the fact that in this movie, Scott has a prototype Ant-Man suit, and he gets stuck at 3 feet tall.
Yeah,
and that whole scene, because it's backfiring on him, right?
Yeah, when they were in the school, because his like, I forget the term they use for it, but the little device that controls his increasing and decreasing in size messes up, and so he looks like a little kid in the school. That whole thing, the scene between them, I thought was really
good. Yeah, no, that was great. Like him walking around the school in that like jacket that was still a little too big for him. Oh, that was so good. And then he like. When he climbs up into the van and like sits in the seat, and Hank Pym or Michael Douglas like turns around and is like, "Did you have a good day at school today? Huh? Would you like a juice box? Wait, what did he say? Would you like a juice box and
something else?
Would you like some string cheese and a juice box?" Yeah. And then he's like, "Ha ha! Wait,
do you have some?
Do you actually have some of that?" that whole scene was fantastic.
Like I said, I did. Even though they leaned a lot harder on the comedy in this movie than they did in the first one, I thought a lot of it played off really well.
Yeah, I think a lot of it landed. Chai in chat or in Discord says, side note, how about that shade that Evangeline Lilly's thrown male actors in their costumes? Wait, Sorry, you might have to elaborate on that. Is he talking about the character throwing shade at the other costumes, actors and costumes in the movie? Did I miss something?
He said Evangeline Lilly, not the Wasp or whatever.
Oh, so is this something that she's actually been saying, like, off?
Maybe.
Like, as herself. Maybe.
I don't know.
Chai's
acting like he knows what we know what he's talking about, but we don't.
Yeah, Chai, post some additional details on that. I'm just curious. Anyways, as far as the Wasp goes, I think she was actually, she's pretty fun. Like, I think her action sequences were a lot of fun, maybe more in line with what you would come to expect from other Marvel movies. She's very agile and fast, and
she's basically Black Widow with shrinking powers.
Yeah, exactly.
And
wings
and blasters.
Yeah, and all of that sounds dope. Like, Ant-Man has always been like his action sequences
Black Widow
are very
had
clumsy.
Dead blaster powers.
No,
she had those wrist things.
But they were only like impact on like on hits. Like the Wasp was like shooting out blasts of energy.
Yeah, and she also does like there's a lot of really cool action sequences in this movie where she's flipping around doing martial arts and stuff and shrinking and like growing like on the fly as she's doing this kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and so that was kind of some of the stuff that Ant-Man did in the first one. But I think because there was a lot more time spent establishing the character himself, they didn't get to focus on that. And they do bring it up that when you're small, that you know you have much more power because it's, you know, your size, you know, compacted into a smaller amount.
Yeah.
So I like that. I do like that we got to see it more here, the shrinking and growing and shrinking and growing. We got to see a little bit of that when Ant-Man was fighting Falcon mm-hmm. in the original Ant-Man, but there wasn't enough of that, in my opinion. So I'm glad we got to see more of it.
Exactly. So real quick, Chai said, Evangeline Lilly said her costume wasn't uncomfortable because women are used to being uncomfortable to look good and men are whiny. And so I got, that's some shade. That is some shade. To be fair, too, I think her costume looked pretty cool. Not like I think she looked sexy. I mean, which maybe she did, but I think just in general, like her costume was really well designed and fit really well. Like it was a nice juxtaposition to Ant-Man's costume. They look like a good team when they're side by side, like in the same shots. And Chai says, and then she showed she was wearing stilettos. Damn. Sorry, we got more comments coming in from Patreon supporters. Illumination says Skyliner in chat said, that's a very sneaky tactic there, Illumination. Said, some reporter asked her, oh, was the outfit uncomfortable? How'd you do? She responded like, quote unquote, yeah, there was a corset in there, but girls are totally used to being in pain for fashion. We don't care. Eh, it makes sense. And you know what? We appreciate that. All right. Moving on to the next question. I asked Crispy. I said, what would you say is the greatest strength of Ant-Man and the Wasp as a sequel to Ant-Man and or as a core entry in the MCU series? He said, I think the heart and humor are stronger and better suited to these films than maybe some of the other Marvel films. Not that I have a problem with humor in the Marvel movies. This one felt a little heavier on action at the expense of some of the comedy, but it balances both relatively well. So I think one thing I think is interesting about what Crispy said is that we've been talking a lot about it and we've all kind of said it leans more into the comedy aspect of it, and it seems like maybe he's going in a different direction, or maybe he's just saying that because they lean more on the action, some of the comedy doesn't land as well.
And that's kind of what I was saying earlier, is that there was definitely more of everything mm-hmm. in the first one, in this one compared to the first one. The first one definitely was slower. You had the origin story, whereas in this you just jumped right into everything. The origin story of Ghost was like all of like 30 seconds long or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And so first of all, I do like that. But I think, yeah, they definitely, this movie was way more fast paced than the first one. And like I said, just had more of everything. So yes, I do agree that while there was more of everything and a lot of it was good, definitely when you have so much, eventually something in there is going to be bad. Like you can't nail everything.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. And then, let's see, moving right down the list here, I said, actually, I'm going to save that one for last. I said, this is in reference to Michelle Pfeiffer's character, which we also haven't really talked much about, which is essentially Evangeline Lilly's character. What's her name?
Jelly Bean.
Hope. Jelly Bean. That's yeah. funny. Nice one, Noel. Hope
Pants
Van Dyke.
Like jelly beans.
I mean, it's kind of true.
That is true. She plays Hope's mother, who used to be the Wasp when Hank Pym, who was her father, used to be the Ant-Man. And she was actually, she went subatomic on a mission to, in order to try and stop a missile from, like, hitting a city, and ended up getting lost in the quantum realm. And this entire movie is kind of, like, built around them trying to maybe see if they can retrieve her from the quantum, like maybe she's still alive, that kind of thing. So I said,
well, this actually stems from the end of the original Ant-Man, when Scott goes into the quantum realm, mm-hmm. and is able to get out of it, that they have a conversation. They're like, oh, well, if you were able to escape from it, maybe Janet can as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it, just on a side note, I think it's also really, Marvel's gotten really good at this, but like they're very subtle at doing actual like setup and world building for the sequel, for like even like the origins of characters in the original film before the sequel, like the Wasp, they were very subtly doing origin setup for the Wasp in the original Ant-Man by introducing Hope's like kind of like, you know, snotty like I why don't I get to be Ant-Man, you know, that whole thing, so that when we finally see her in this movie as the Wasp, we immediately know how, you know, we went from point A to point B. It's not just, it's not suddenly shocking that suddenly she's the Wasp. They're really good at doing that. So that in regards to the quantum realm, they did some setup in the first movie as well, which is nice. But I said, this is more of a jokey question, I guess, but I said, how does one survive in the quantum realm without food or water? And Crispy said, well, actually, first, Nolan, do you have any theories?
I mean, my only thought would be is the fact that they're smaller than so all of those molecules and stuff. And so, I mean, it's just potentially that they could survive, I guess, a very long time on almost infinite, not obviously infinite, but a long time on those limited resources because they are so small and potentially time.
Maybe they only have to eat something once a year.
Not even, like, maybe what was in their stomach is good enough to last, you know, 20, 30 years just because they're so small. I don't know. That's like a thought.
Maybe
she did say time operates differently there.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, she also aged the exact amount of time she was in there, though. She didn't come out like 25. She came out like 50.
That's true. That is true. Show 5 still looks good, by the way, at 50. maybe she just had lunch right before she went subatomic, and she's still living off that one meal 30 years later. Although, that's when you think about that and you get to the nitty-gritty, that sounds kind of gross. Anyways, Crispy said, well, if you have plot on your side, that's a big help. But also consider that space and time don't function in the quantum realm like they do in the real world, which is what Chris Davis just said. So who's to say how long Janet was there by her perspective? She physically aged, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the process was steady and gradual. There, you know, this is another example of, you know, playing kind of fast and loose with, you know, the laws of reality, which Marvel tends to do a lot. And that's obviously something we just kind of have to accept watching this movie. They're all super bombastic movies. They do crazy shit all the time. I'm not going to lose sleep over that one. I just thought it was funny. Also, did anybody else get... remember... Ant-Man's in the pod, and it like runs out of juice or something, and he's waiting for it to start back up, and there's those weird like larva looking things.
They're called I forget. That's a real thing. That's not like a made up thing. Those are real things that exist in our world. Termagrade.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like
tardigrades. Skyliner and chat. But yeah, no, those are actual real things that can survive in space for like a decade. And just be fine afterwards, yeah.
I didn't like them because they reminded me of that scene in King Kong, the one Peter Jackson's King Kong with the, were those leeches or something?
I mean, yeah, there were leeches. Yeah.
Where it's like eating that,
the guy, yeah.
Yeah, that movie, that scene fucked me up for a long time. I thought I was about to have flashbacks to that scene while watching this movie. Luckily, I didn't. So
another thing that I think I wanted to bring up, I don't know if it's on your list mm-hmm. or not, but it's something I was worried they comedy wise were going mm-hmm. to fuck up. because they almost overused it in the first movie, but they didn't. It was a good amount, and I thought they were going to do like kind of delve deeper into it in this movie because everyone liked it so much. But it was Michael Pena's character Lewis, him doing his quick, fast explaining of things. I really thought they were going to overuse that, but they honestly only ended up doing it in like one scene in this,
and it was great.
It fit perfectly. The fact that it was like, oh, it's a truth serum or whatever, and he's like, where is Scott? And he actually did answer him truthfully. I mean, he was answering where he is mentally, not so much physically. But I thought that entire little kind of montage.
Like, he answered it truthfully, but it just implies that he interpreted the question wrong, which I think was a really nice touch.
But, I thought that scene was really good.
Lewis is an amazing character. I love him. And was it you that said somebody had, like, people are trying to get him to, like, or... them to do
Crispy,
some,
I think, said that.
Where they're trying to get him to do a thing where he kind of explains the MCU so far in that style, like because that would be
really hoping he does that for the next Avengers.
Would be amazing. I hope he shows up in the Avengers and does something like that. That'd be great. Like I said, a lot of real quick. Since I don't know if we're gonna get to like cover some of these. I only have a couple more things to go over, but like as far as the cast goes in this movie, I think it's great. Like we've already mentioned, obviously Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas continues to be a really great Hank Pym. I think Michael Pena, who plays Lewis, we just mentioned, but a few that stood out to me, or I guess in addition to Randall Park, which is the FBI agent who is fucking hysterical, but also Walton Goggins appeared in this movie. I had no idea. He's the.
I love Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins is so great.
Movie going into it, but I think every role. I mean, he's similar in my opinion to like a Sam Rockwell, where he plays bad guys really well.
He elevates most things that he's in to like, if they're like subpar. Like he was the villain in that Tomb Raider movie, which I think by all intents and purposes was a pretty mediocre movie. But like the reason I think it was elevated to mediocre from like plain bad was mostly because Walton Goggins is such a fun person to watch do his thing. Like I know him, I know him mostly from Justified. He was the villain in that show, which is fucking fantastic. But he's been in so many things lately. I thought he was a really nice surprise because I had no idea he was going to be in this movie.
I didn't know his actual name until just now.
Walton Goggins.
Really? He's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Django Unchained. He was in The Hateful Eight. He was in.
I've seen him in plenty of stuff. I just never knew his name.
Oh, okay.
Oops. Can y'all hear? Sorry. No. I totally unplugged my headphones there on accident.
They thought he was done.
I know. I'm done with this podcast. It's over. It's done. But yeah, a lot of great talent. Also, Lawrence Fishburne was pretty good in this movie. There was one scene where they, I guess there's like a flashback, right, with Lawrence Fishburne, and they de-aged him like they tend to try and do. When we were watching the credits, I noticed... it didn't say, it was like young Bill, he plays Dr. Bill Foster, young Bill played by, I can't remember, like
Langston
Fishburne. I was like, what? It's his son, which I thought was really interesting, because you don't even, you can't, if you're not paying attention, you can miss it really easily. But like I said, a lot of great people in this cast. I think it's more, as Marvel continues to like kind of like knock the casting out of the park with all these movies, but I think Ant-Man has a particularly strong cast. But anyways, a couple more things to cover here. All right, so this is kind of getting into post credit scene territory. Are we comfortable moving on to this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay,
sure.
So just quick, we've been kind of vague about spoilers. We've talked a lot about the movie without saying a lot of specifics, but like this is perhaps the biggest spoiler we could potentially talk about because it involves the post credit scene and it's a pretty big deal. The post-credits scene in this movie, we can't not talk about it, involves Ant-Man. They intentionally put Ant-Man back into the quantum realm so he can try and collect data to try and figure out and learn more.
No, he needed healing particles. And I think they did mention it was for Ava. I'm assuming that whatever Michelle Pfeiffer did to her when she, like, bleh,
did
whatever.
Did you say Pfeiffer?
Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
That was a joke we had the other night.
Whatever she did to Ava maybe isn't permanent, and so they need to potentially go back to the quantum realm to collect healing particles, and I'm sure they can probably do other stuff with them as well.
Yeah, and by the way, Destructor confirms, yes, I was not totally accurate. It's actually a mid-credit scene.
Yeah, when you earlier when you were like post-credit scene, you know, spoilery. I'm like, why is an ant playing a drum set? Spoilery.
Spoilers. Yeah, yeah. The big one is obviously the mid-credit scene. But they put Ant-Man back into the quantum realm to collect healing particles, and then they're going to do a countdown to like pull him back out. And it's and outside in the real world, we have Hank and Hope and Janet, all the Pims, on call to help him out. And they're doing a countdown. They're like 5, 4, 3, and then they disappear. Like, oh, they stop talking, and then it cuts back to the real world, and they're all turned to ash. So it implies that's the moment that Thanos snapped his fingers, and they all got eliminated. So Ant-Man is stuck in the quantum realm without any way to return. So first of all,
hold on. I will say that in the first movie, he was able to return from the quantum realm without anyone else's help. So potentially I think it'd be pretty silly of them to put him in the quantum realm without maybe a backup plan. So yeah. I don't think he's necessarily stuck there. Maybe they just wanted to leave it on that cliffhanger.
True. Definitely possible. But I asked Crispy, do you have any theories regarding the ominous post-credit scene that ties into Infinity War? And Crispy said, my theory regarding the post-credit scene is that Hank, Hope, and Janet will come back. Lol. Okay. one thing I keep thinking about is Scott's was spared because he just so happened to fall in the... Or was Scott spared because he just so happened to fall in the half of sentient life that was randomly selected to live? Or because the quantum realm exists outside of an adjacent reality and is therefore somehow beyond the reach of the Infinity Gems?
I mean,
that's an interesting question.
The Infinity Gems are supposed to have power over the entire universe, not just specific realities. So
sure.
Well, hold on, Chris Stones Davis. It's over the entire universe, but there are multiple universes in a multiverse. So do the stones only control the universe they are in?
I mean, have they confirmed it's a multiverse, though?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe they're building it up to that point. But I think it is a fair question because I actually had that thought too. I was, you know, it was just luck, or does the quantum realm have some kind of effect? Could they somehow be teasing the quantum realm being used as a way to, you know, defeat Thanos or bring back people or, you know, something like that? Who knows? They may have been setting something bigger up there. I'm just hoping this doesn't turn into like, well, Ant-Man's not going to be in Avengers 4 because he's stuck in the quantum realm. You know what I mean?
Like, if they were to do that, they would have to have a single scene where it's just Ant-Man floating around like, hello?
Yeah.
That's the only way I would be okay with him not being in the second Infinity War.
Or they somehow as a byproduct of like defeating Thanos, he just kind of gets out of the quantum realm or something, and he's like, hey, what'd I miss? And like has no idea what the fuck just happened. Like something silly like that would be nice. But
one of the things that has leaked about Avengers 4 is that they've cast in an actress to a 20-something actress to play as Cassie.
Ant-Man's daughter. So there's theories about time travel.
Yeah, there's gotcha. A whole thing about time travel in there. In fact, they mentioned during that mid-credit scene that he has to watch out while he's in the quantum realm because he might get stuck in a time warp.
I think they're starting to kind of like tease the idea of time travel, especially with...
Oh, no, they are.
Yeah, I think they're about to get crazy with this shit. I think if anything, the next like phase of the Avenger or of Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to be focused very heavily on like traveling through time. For all the heroes, who knows? They're about to go like crazy comic book, you know, like crazy comic book shit on this on the series, which could be interesting.
Which hey, if this is going to be the final Avengers movie for quite a while, then sure, go for it,
absolutely,
fucking do it,
absolutely. I asked Crispy, do you predict that any of the new characters introduced in Ant-Man and the Wasp will make an appearance in the Avengers 4 or beyond, i.e. the Wasp, Ghost, Michelle Pfeiffer, because at the time I didn't remember her name, Janet, I guess. And let's see, what did he say to that one? He said,
damn it.
Wait, what?
Nothing.
Oh, where the fuck? He says, I'm pretty sure Ant-Man will be a part of the new Avengers, quote-unquote, formed to defeat Thanos, mostly because who else is there? And he has a good point. They killed off, like, a lot of the... I'm kind of worried the Avengers 4 is going to feel very, like, you know...
hey, you know what?
Super focused.
It's going to probably feel like a lot like the first Avengers, because that's pretty much everyone who's alive.
Yeah, it's going to be like a 5-man team in the Avengers, you know, but it'll be a different 5-man team mostly. But like, that's pretty cool too. I don't know. But yeah, I'm wondering, cuz the Wasp, Evangeline Lilly's character was meant to actually appear in Civil War, I believe, and was cut at the last second before they filmed it, I guess. So she was actually supposed to make her introduction to the series before Ant-Man 2. So who knows? I hope they bring back the Wasp. I think she's a pretty cool character with a lot of potential. And honestly, I would like to see them do more with Ghost. Maybe they can make Ghost like a cool character. Maybe even add her to the Avengers lineup. She has cool fucking powers, but if they're healing her, then maybe she won't have those cool powers anymore. I don't know.
And she's no longer technically a bad guy, so...
Yeah, very true.
Why not?
Very true. And last but not least, I asked Crispy, are there any general thoughts or ideas related to the film that you'd like us to introduce in the discussion? And he said, I love the supporting cast, Fishburne, the Southern guy who is everywhere now, Walton Goggins, Ghost, Lewis, and the security buds. He loved all those characters. Scott as Janet was a weird sequence, and I don't know if it was
God. Dude, I fucking love that scene.
That was a great scene, but like Crispy has a good point. He says, Scott as Janet, and I don't think we need to go into super crazy detail about what this is, but there's a pretty great scene, and I'm just going to kind of read this on it. It may not make any sense to anyone listening, but you should go see it because it's a funny movie.
You have to wonder how many takes of that scene they did, because there's no way they didn't crack up like a dozen times.
I know. It's a magical moment, I'd say. But Scott as Janet was a weird sequence, and I don't know if it was thematically successful as intended, but that could just be me. Paul Rudd, even when he's on, quote unquote, still seems like he's not really taking things super seriously. Not that that's a bad thing. I think it works well throughout both films, but in this sequence, it kind of came off as Paul Rudd pretending to be Scott, pretending to be Janet, as opposed to Paul Rudd playing Janet Van Dyne. Despite no direct allusion to domestic violence, something that Hank Pym is somewhat infamous for. By the way, there was an article just today, I think, on Kotaku or IGN or somewhere where they were talking about Hank Pym, Michael Douglas's character in the comics, and apparently he's a real shithead in the comics. Like, he has a long history of being super cocky, making terrible decisions, and in some cases even domestic violence towards Janet.
Jesus.
So there's no direct allusion to any of that in the films, which he thinks is a good thing. The films overall do a really good job of sowing a sense of troubling nature below the surface of Hank's character, without, you know, any direct allusions to that kind of stuff. I agree with all those statements. I think I maybe liked that scene with Janet more than Crispy did, and even if it wasn't necessarily, they could have done it better, but like, even in the moment, it's fucking hilarious. I loved it. It's that kind of stuff that like honestly, I think Ant-Man and the Wasp might be, correct me if I'm wrong here, it might be like the funniest movie in the MCU, maybe just barely edged out by Thor Ragnarok.
I was about to say, maybe Thor. Thor was pretty funny. Spider-Man Homecoming definitely had its funny moments,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, definitely. But, like, these are the two movies in the entire... Like, I think they... One thing that... Because, obviously, there's probably some overlap when they were making these two movies, but, like, they must have seen the reception to Thor Ragnarok at some point during the production of this movie, and I can't imagine that didn't have some kind of impact on how they did this movie. Because it definitely feels like they saw how humor, like, if they lean into humor, how it could really have a dramatic impact on the movie, so they decided to lean into it.
I think this is also the most family-friendly, you know, superhero thing of the entire MCU, so...
Yeah, and I was about to say maybe Thor Ragnarok was pretty family-friendly too, but then I remembered the scene about Hulk being naked. But that's not really that big a deal.
And he also loses his eye.
There's some
violence in that movie.
And this whole thing has like kind of like a... he's very much trying to... He wants to be with his daughter, and that's kind of his driving... his driving focus in this movie. So, yeah. I'll give that to you, Chris Davis. This is definitely the most family-friendly movie in the entire MCU. But that is all Crispy had to say. Does anybody else have anything you want to say? We can probably wrap this up here, but... Anything in closing y'all want to say about Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I thought it was a pretty good movie. Like I said, it's definitely not perfect, but I definitely enjoyed my time with it, which I'm glad for because I'm going to see it again.
Oh, yeah.
some of my coworkers are going, and this was decided before. This was a while ago. So I'm glad I enjoyed it. I was anticipating a bad movie, but I was worried that, like I said earlier, after the comedy of the first movie, they were going to lean into it too hard. And while I thought they leaned into it harder than they probably needed to, I thought at least most of it stuck.
Yeah. And there's always that concern, especially like if you look at the early stages of the MCU, like the first sequels to some of these movies didn't turn out the greatest. We had Thor 2, we had Iron Man 2. But then we had things like Winter Soldier, which is the second Captain America movie, which I think blew the first one out of the water. Like, you know, so you never really know what to expect, but they've gotten so good at making these movies because, you know, it's basically a Marvel factory at this point. They have a pretty good feel for what works and what doesn't, and I think they did a pretty good job of balancing everything. At the same time, introducing some really cool characters that I would love to see appear in future films. Chris Davis?
I think it was really good. Again, I reiterate what I said at the beginning. I think it's better than the first film. I think the characters work off one another quite a bit better. I think the sort of the heist action that happens is a lot more fun than the first film.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there.
And I think it was a nice balance out against the drama and very, very heavy, heavy film that was Infinity War.
Oh my God. Talk about a palate cleanser after Infinity War. I think it was probably a pretty smart move to like have something low key and fun right after Infinity War.
And especially something now that we're not going to see any movies until like next April, I think.
Yeah. Well, the next one is Captain Marvel, which is, is that next? I think that's 2019. I think it's early.
Yeah, it's next year.
Definitely. March or April of next year, and then it's directly followed by Avengers. It's going to be like it feels weird because this is going to be like maybe the biggest gap we've had in a while between Marvel movies. We won't be talking about another Marvel movie for quite a while, but I think that's probably a good thing. By the time it happens, we'll all be ready. And Captain Marvel, I'm sure, is going to be really great in its own way, too. So,
I mean, it's going to have Clark Gregg in it, so I'm glad about that.
Clark Gregg, is that
Coulson?
Yes, that's what I was going for. Thank you. All right. Distrotor in Discord says March 8th is the date for Captain Marvel, which, by the way, they finished filming just a couple days ago. So principal photography is done. They're starting on post-production. That's pretty exciting. I'm really looking forward to getting our first look at what that movie actually is and what Captain Marvel, like what the tone of the movie is, because it's going to be pretty cool, I think.
It's 1 week before the Division 2. That's nice.
Oh, man. Basing everything on the Division 2, Chris Davis. Anyways, I think that's a wrap for this episode of 4-Player Plus, guys. Nolan, Chris Davis, thank you so much for being here. If you have not yet seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, I hope we didn't spoil too much. I think we all recommend it. It's a great movie, especially if you've already seen and know you enjoy a lot of the Marvel movies that came before it. So check that out. It's in theaters now. And like I said, next week, around this time, Monday night, probably around 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, Chris Davis is going to join me for another episode. We're going to talk about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And we're going to tie that conversation into our time with Jurassic World Evolution, which is that new park simulation game that came out just before that movie release. So join us next week for that discussion. And if you're interested in supporting us on Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/4player. You can join us in Discord at discord.gg/4player. And of course, you can find all of our podcasts and content over at 4playernetwork.com. So that's all we got for today, guys. Thank you for tuning in. And if you're watching us live, stick around. I'm going to be playing more Resident Evil Remake right after we finish recording. So, good night.
Bye.
Goodbye.